research, policy, and practice meet. I am your host, Jonathan Ferguson. Our episodes contain interviews with researchers and discuss evidence-based strategies that policymakers and practitioners can implement to strengthen financial well-being for individuals at all stages of life.
For this episode, we have an interview with Dr. Yvonne Hampton. Dr. Hampton is a research fellow at the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Retirement and Disability Research Center, and also serves as a managing health economist at Johns Hopkins Health. Dr. Hampton's research interests include the relationship between finances and health, retirement, health insurance, and housing affordability. She holds a PhD in human environmental sciences and a master's degree in personal financial planning from the University of Missouri-Columbia. Additionally, she holds a master's degree in economics from the University of Missouri-Kansas City, a master's in business from Avila University, and a BS in economics from Kansas State University. We will discuss Yvonne's research project titled, An Analysis of the Effects of Prior Psychological Distress on Retirement Age and Wealth in Retirement by Race, Gender, and Ethnicity. So thanks, Yvonne, for joining us on today's podcast. We're really happy to have you with us. We'll get started with my first question for you, which is, what has been a financial aha moment in your life? And that can be something that you learned from someone or discovered yourself that has been important to your financial life.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited for us to talk today. I think the biggest aha moment that I've had is when I was first learning about, you know, financial security and finances and everything involved in this world that we work in. I thought that it was much more simple. So many of the folks that work, you know, out in the field, not necessarily are researchers, but they say you can have a budget or you just need to work more on your finances. But I think that understanding that there's often, more often than not, a psychological component to how we handle our money and how we interact with the world of money was a real aha moment. And it's changed how I research, it's changed how I do my own finances and kind of look inward into how I manage things. So I think that was a big one. Understanding that has changed how I work. And so I think that having that kind of underlying understanding has also changed how I work with clients and how I work with others regarding their finances and has helped a lot as well.
Yeah, thanks for that answer. It's something that I realized too. When I was growing up, I just thought money was the same for everybody. I didn't think that, you know, I guess in some ways I thought we were all robots when it came to money management. Like everybody does it exactly the same and we don't have any differences and there's one way to manage money. And over time, you know, as you become more educated, get more life experience, you realize that there are many ways to handle money. And a lot of that is based on our own emotional, psychological, and other background details. And the best way to go about it could be different for each person, just based on those on their background and experience. So I really appreciate your answer to that question so much because it's something that took me some time to realize, and it means a lot when you do realize it, and it changes how you manage your own money, and then as us people who work in, you know, financial capability, financial security, financial wellness, it changes how you approach working with others with their money too.
Right.
So that is really, really important. So our next question for you is more specific to your research and that we're talking about here today. And it's really, really just looking to learn what motivated you to complete this specific research.
This research project that I'm working on as a part of the fellowship is actually a continuation of my dissertation work. And my dissertation was examining the relationship between psychological distress which would generally be bundled as depression and anxiety, and its effect on subsequent financial changes. And so what I saw when I first started to narrow down what my topic was going to be, I knew that I wanted to do something regarding health and finances, because just in the literature that I had been reading, there wasn't the angle that I kept seeing in the world. And so at the time, this was right before COVID hit. And as COVID hit, there was so much discussion on the news and on social media and just in media in general about mental health. And there was also a lot of discussion about finances because, you know, as we all know, many people lost their jobs and there were a lot of financial challenges that were going on at the time, as well as the mental health challenges of lockdown. There were several articles and kind of news bits that I saw, and they were saying that mental health affects your finances. But when I would look at the articles specifically and kind of go in and try to understand, oh, what are they citing or what theory are they using? Almost none of the articles referenced any kind of theory. And as researchers, we're taught that your research needs to be grounded in some sort of theory. So none of the articles were really referencing a theory. And then also, much of the data was just straight cross-sectional data. So let's take a snapshot of 2020. People that had mental health issues in 2020, what were their finances in 2020? But I knew, just based on what I had seen, what I had seen in my work as a health economist, some of the research projects that I had been on, we got health information as well as financial information. And so I had anecdotally seen this relationship of increased mental health conditions. I knew that there was a relationship because of what I was seeing in my work, and I was seeing on the news, and the news articles wasn't telling the whole story. It was very cross-sectional, as I said. So we're looking at what's going on in 2020, for example, financially and mental health. But what about what happened before? How did we get here? And so I wanted to better understand that. And so that's how we got here.
Are there any constraints or limitations that you see for your research that is important to call out?
Absolutely. Every research project has some sort of limitation because there's no way for us to include everything, especially when we're using secondary data. We have to go with what those persons that set up the analysis and set up the research questions, what they did. This research project, we're utilizing the PSID data, the panel study of income dynamics data. That data set has some limitations with respect to gender and persons that are Hispanic. So those, I think, would be the two pieces. So I'll elaborate a little bit. So with respect to gender, the PSID was created in 1968 to essentially understand the demographics of poverty and some of the underlying characteristics of families that were experiencing poverty. So out of that, the structure of it from 1968, if we kind of go back in time and think about how families were structured and how research would have been structured back then, it has this male head position, so to speak. So if a male is present, then he is typically the head of the household. So even if there's a husband and wife or cohabitating partners, if there is a male, he is more likely than not going to be the head. So much of this research is looking at the household in general. And so one of the challenges is that for households where there is a man and a woman present as the adults in the household, that the data are reflecting what's happening with the man more so than what's happening with the woman, if there is a male-female relationship there. The other piece is that for respondents that identify as Hispanic, you know, what we've seen over time, and not just in that this isn't just the PSIB, there can be differences in how they report whether or not they're Hispanic over time. That's one of the challenges. Because the PSID is a genealogical sample, meaning that those persons that were included in the initial sample in 1968, their children, their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren are in the sample. But we've had changes over time. And so we have a larger Hispanic population. And so they did an injection of a Hispanic sample, but many of those persons were not retired. When we were doing the initial paper for the dissertation, we limited the sample to those respondents who reported that they were either Black or white, because the other groups, the Asian population, the Hispanic respondents, they were so small, we couldn't get a good sample and good findings from such a small sample. So I think that would be the other limitation.
I think the only way that we can improve the gaps that we have is by recognizing them and then evaluating how to best overcome them or launch different research that speaks to those gaps. And so it's really important that you recognize them, share that, and then recognize that the data that you do have has lots of applicability, but there are going to be some things that it can't speak to in the same ways. So I think that's really, really important. So thanks for sharing it. So next, tell us about what your research found.
We're really excited about this work, because, as I said, you know, some of this similar work had been done in the UK, in Europe, but here the work had really been focused on serious mental illness. We're looking at depression and anxiety, essentially, using the Kessler 6 scale of psychological distress. And so that is when you go to the doctor and they ask you, do you feel like you don't have energy, or do you feel that you don't have joy? Things like that. That questionnaire goes to what kind of symptoms of anxiety and depression that you're using. So what we were trying to understand was, how does this relationship between pre-retirement psychological distress and the wealth that they have at retirement, this project expands it to wealth in retirement, and controlling for what's going on within retirement, we're controlling for family income, education, marital status, you know, things like that, that are typically controlled for. What we found was that, so you could have psychological distress, you know, 10 years before you retired. And that pre-retirement psychological distress has a negative impact on the amount of wealth that you have. We're looking at wealth as our financial measure, and specifically percent changes in wealth, because people may have, some respondents, some families have more wealth, some families have less, and we want to control for that. So we're looking at, how did their wealth change? So those respondents that had higher levels of psychological distress, they had, and this is in their pre-retirement, it could be 10 years before, 12 years before, those persons that had higher psychological distress had a greater and negative change in wealth than those persons that didn't have psychological distress. And initially what we were going to do was just kind of look at those high levels of psychological distress, so the people that were really struggling. The Kessler 6 psychological distress scale is from 0 to 24. And so initially we were going to look at those persons that had about 13 scale, had a score of about 13 all the way up to 24. But when I was looking more in detail and doing kind of a cursory analysis, I found that there was a relationship even with people that had scores of 2 and 3 and 4 and 5. they're kind of low level, subclinical from a health standpoint. Your physician or your clinician may not do anything about it, but it's still affecting your wealth down the road. And so I think the three big findings would be, one, that psychological distress well before your retirement date has an effect on how your wealth has changed, and it's going to be negative. Like, it's going to be a drag down on the wealth that you would have had you not had these mental health challenges. So there were several things that we found. One of them was that our pre-retirement psychological distress has a significant, and we're using this from a statistical term, it's a statistically significant relationship with the wealth at retirement. But you could experience psychological distress in this model 12 years before your retirement date, and that psychological distress that you experienced 12 years ago had a statistically significant and negative effect on your wealth at retirement. So we looked at these changes in wealth in two ways. The PSID has two measures of wealth. So one measure includes home equity and the other measure excludes home equity. What we found was that the home equity piece, or the wealth that's held within the home, that was a buffer. So it wasn't as sensitive to changes and psychological distress and even other changes as was just our financial wealth. I think the other big thing is that, you know, your psychological distress that you experienced years before can have an effect on how your wealth has changed into retirement. And then some of the recent work that has just come out as a part of this expansion, that those persons that had psychological distress in pre-retirement years, they have a lower retirement age, they have a lower percent change in wealth into retirement as well. And so, you know, I think that kind of the big overarching takeaway is for us to understand that these mental health challenges don't have to be at the level where someone is being hospitalized or even receiving treatment, that even at some of these lower levels, psychological distress, that they have an effect, kind of a wearing on folks, that it can affect your wealth, which is our financial security in totality, right? Kind of the whole bundle wrapped together, which is why we used the wealth measure in the first place.
Yeah, it makes sense that distress, mental wellness distress would have an impact to some extent, but it is really enlightening to know that even a small amount of distress can have maybe what some would call an outsized impact from a wealth perspective. And as we hear in the news media and is an ongoing conversation within our circles, is that the fact that home equity has implications for lots of different things, and that particular wealth or lack thereof has implications in lots of different ways, not just the bottom line of what someone's net worth is. It's different. Different than your 401k account, different than what you may have in an IRA, different than the cash you hold or other assets that you may have. There's something about it that makes it unique. And it's interesting to see that come through in your research. So given all that, everything that you all found and some of your primary takeaways, what implications would you say there are from the research? Like, what can we do about it? And who do you think maybe can do something about it? Or maybe it's just an ongoing discussion. But yeah, what are some of the implications you think for either policymakers, practitioners, or others?
Yeah, I think that, you know, your point on the home equity is a huge piece, because it acted as a buffer against, you know, some of the challenges that the respondents were experiencing. I think that the big takeaway and that the big piece for policymakers and the kind of the so what is that practitioners, policymakers, researchers, that we understand that it doesn't have to be these serious mental health conditions. It doesn't have to be that someone is hospitalized or even taking medication or seeing a psychiatrist or a therapist for these conditions to affect their finances. From a practitioner standpoint, I think that it would be helpful to understand some of the long-term implications of clients' mental health issues. So we're, you know, so practitioners are helping them work through challenges today. But I haven't heard a lot, even with my practitioner friends, I haven't heard a lot about the thoughts or the consideration that these conditions would affect their financial health down the road in 10 years, 15 years, you know, so on. So I think just having an understanding that the work that we do today, the conditions that clients are experiencing today, can, even if they're not severe, can have a significant impact. I think that that knowledge piece is really helpful from a policymaker standpoint. You know, just as you said, I think that one, the understanding of what's really going on, because it's not out here. There were other researchers that didn't find a relationship here in the U.S. And some of the things that we did in the paper, like using the Kessler 6, using wealth, using the percent change, and controlling for some of the overall economic conditions, I think were helpful in us getting statistical significance. But I think the big thing is understanding this relationship, that even at low levels, we have to take care of our mental health. In policy, we need to understand this because I think it would affect some of the funding. You know, I knew that there had to be a relationship here because I was seeing it firsthand. There just wasn't research that was backing it up. It was all anecdotal. But our mental health affects so many aspects of our lives, as well as our finances. But from a policy standpoint, you know, understanding that this has the potential, especially when the feedback loop kind of gets involved, of experiencing psychological distress, so then you have financial hardship, and then financial hardship leads to more psychological distress. That has potential for utilization of social programs and all kinds of things. And so understanding this relationship is really important so that we can kind of get some breaks in this feedback loop and help people lead a better life.
This is important research. It's person-centered. It's bringing a new perspective to the impact on a group that's been marginalized. I think it's really important, and I appreciate you doing the work. If our listeners would like to learn more about this research or your work on other research, how can they find it?
So I'd love to talk more about it or just share some of the findings in more detail. Folks can reach out to me on LinkedIn, and I can provide whatever supplemental information they'd like to see or just talk about it more. So thank you so much. And thanks so much for having me today.
This has been a great episode. So thanks so much.
Thank you.
Please follow our podcast on your podcast app to remain updated on the latest work from the UW-Madison Retirement and Disability Research Center. You can also visit our center on the web at cfsrdrc.wisc.edu. There, you'll find our latest news, publications, and webinars. Until our next episode, let's all keep doing our best to support equity and financial security.